We're going to be in Acts chapter 18 this morning. If you have your Bible, you can go and be opening there. If you don't have a Bible, you can grab one of them that's in the pew in front of you, and it's on page 927. But we're going to be in Acts chapter 18. We don't often title sermons when we come in here. It's not something that Pastor Cam does very regularly. But if we had to title this sermon, I think I would title it, God Provides Everything in the Right Time. God provides everything in the right time. Several years ago when me and Megan got married, I was just out of my freshman year in college, and Megan was just out of her senior year in high school. And so we were young, and we didn't know what we were doing. And whenever a young couple like that gets married, their friends decide that those people don't want to do anything with us anymore because they're married. They're adults. They don't need us unmarried friends to invite them to do things. And so it began to be a bit of a lonely time for us as we were trying to figure out marriage, and we were trying to figure out what our life was going to look like, and we were trying to figure out how do we even do all this. And so God, in his graciousness, brought us into a small group of friends that were in a similar stage in life. Most of us young, married, a couple of us with kids. But those group of people provided for me and Megan what we needed in that season. And those became some of our core people as we were growing, as we were going through college, as we were establishing ourselves. So much so that those people lived in Murray, which is also where my parents and all of my family live, and where Megan's parents and all of her family live. And we decided one weekend we were going to take a trip to Murray, and we weren't going to tell my parents, and we weren't going to tell Megan's parents, and we were going to stay with some of our friends just so that we could hang out with them. And we love my parents, we love both of our families, but we missed those friends dearly after we moved to Louisville. It took us a while to establish friendships. It actually took us almost until we started coming to LaGrange in 2019 to begin to establish those friendships. Those same pathways, those same people that would care for us the way that our small group had cared for us in Murray. And so God provided for us what we needed in the right time. After we were married, after we moved to Louisville through this church, but he was always looking ahead where we were looking straight down. He was seeing what was coming up, and he was providing for us what we needed so that it would serve our good and his purposes as we were growing. And so what we're going to see this morning as we look at Acts chapter 18 is that God is going to provide for Paul as he comes into the city of Corinth, but through his provision in Paul, he's going to also provide for the whole city of Corinth, and he's also going to provide for his church in the future. See, since Paul has been introduced in the book of Acts, his road has been anything but smooth. Most of us would not look at his life and think, that's exactly how I want to live. He's persecuting the church, and then God blinds him on the road to Damascus, and then he's saved, and he has this transformation from this Jewish Pharisee who is following the law to someone who is pursuing Christ and in a relationship with him. And after that, he has a hit put out on him. We can't have this guy Paul because he's making us look bad as Jews. We cannot have him around. He has a hit put out on him, and so he has to go off into the wilderness, and he leaves. And when he comes back, he starts his missionary journeys, which is what we've been covering for the past several weeks, where he's going from town to town. And it's like, that seems great. We love missionaries. We love what they do. But Paul's journey as a missionary was anything but smooth. There wasn't a lot of downtime for him. He actually got caught in a pattern that would go over and over and over again. Paul would arrive at a town. He would faithfully preach the gospel, and it would have great success, and people would be saved. Amen. Praise the Lord. We're glad that that would happen. But then he would get beaten. He would get stoned. He would get thrown in prison. He would somehow live, pass through that, escape from prison, and have to move on to a new town. Paul's journey isn't one that we would want for ourselves. Most of us wouldn't last one cycle in what Paul was going through as he visited these towns. We duck out, we avoid inconveniences when it interferes with our daily or weekly schedule, much less when people start throwing rocks at us. And yet Paul has been in this cycle for going on 3 years. everywhere he goes. Preach the gospel. People believe, be encouraged. This is amazing. Stone, beaten, thrown in jail, move on to a new town. Preach the gospel. People believe, stone, beaten, thrown in jail, move on to a new town. And so when we get to Acts chapter 18, this doesn't seem like the same Paul that we've been following throughout the book of Acts. His demeanor is a little different. The way he goes about his ministry in Corinth is a little different. It doesn't seem like the same guy that we've been following up until now. Paul's alone. He seems tired. And we get a description of his work that we don't really get anywhere else. And we know that he's alone. We know that he's tired. If you go to 1 Corinthians, it's been guiding us through this morning. Chapter 2, verses 3 and 4 tell us, he reminds the Corinthians, when I came to you, I was in weakness and in fear and in much trembling, and my speech and my message were not in plausible words of wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power. Paul says, when I came to you, I was in weakness, I was in fear, and I was in much trembling. This doesn't sound like the Apostle Paul that we've been following, that has been boldly proclaiming the gospel from town to town. But it's this Paul that God steps in and he intervenes in his life and he provides for Paul what he needs in the moment so that God's mission for the church will be able to go out from there. That it won't be hindered, it won't be slowed down. Paul wouldn't continue to be discouraged, but instead he would be encouraged to continue the mission that he's been given. And so we're going to start there this morning at the beginning of chapter 18, looking at verses 1 through 8, and see how God provides for Paul. Point number one, if you're taking notes and you need a structure to follow along, God provides for Paul. See, God in his kindness brings Paul an encouragement by way of two displaced Jews named Aquila and Priscilla. Let's see what he says, Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 3. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth, and he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And he went to see them. And because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked. For they were tent makers by trade. Paul comes and he's alone and he needs some encouragement. And God, looking ahead, says, I'm going to bring you two friends that you don't know you need yet. I'm going to put these two people, a husband and a wife named Aquila and Priscilla, in your life right now, Paul. And all we know about these two is that they've come from Rome and they make tents. Now, most people believe that Aquila and Priscilla were already Christians when they arrived in Corinth, that they were driven out of Rome because the gospel had gone to Rome and people had believed. And because there was this disturbance and there was friction between the Christians and the Jews, Claudius said, get out of the city. We don't need this disturbance right now. And so Aquila and Priscilla leave Rome and they come to Corinth. And so Paul, being alone, just falls right in line with them. He says, we have some stuff in common. I'm going to hang out with you guys for a little while. I've been alone. I need someone to be with me for just a little bit. I don't know what this conversation looked like, but I imagine that it's like that friend that you have just because you were at an event and they had something in common with you, and so you grabbed onto them and you didn't let them go because no one else there had anything in common with you. It's like my wife teaches, and we go to the middle school teacher Christmas party, and I sit down at a table, and there's a guy sitting there, and I say, are you a teacher or the spouse of a teacher? And he says, I'm the spouse of a teacher. I'm like, check, one thing in common. Oh, you're a Christian as well. We're sitting together. You're not leaving my side. You're the spouse of a teacher, you're a Christian, we're best friends now. That's what happened to Paul. That's all we see that they have in common. They're believers, they make tents. Paul's a believer, he makes tents. Let's get together. Let's hang out. I need some encouragement right now. And so Paul gets some new friends. And these new friends stay with Paul for a long time. We'll see Paul write in the book of Romans. We'll see that as he leaves Corinth after staying there for a year and a half, Aquila and Priscilla go with him. These are people that God brought into his life, and it seemed like a random chance meeting, but they're going to stay with him. They're going to be an encouragement to him for a long time after that. God intervenes, and he brings Paul these new friends, this new encouragement, these people that Paul can sit down with his needle and his knife and make a tent and just hang out with them and rest for a little bit from the weary journey that he's been on. And we don't know how long it is that Paul is just hanging out with Aquila and Priscilla, but it says in verse 4 that he reasoned in the synagogue every Sabbath and tried to persuade Jews and Greeks. So for some amount of time, he's in Corinth with Aquila and Priscilla by himself, and instead of going out every single day to the marketplace or to the place where people gather or to the temple to persuade people to believe in Jesus, he just goes on the Sabbath. He just hangs out with them and he works. I don't know about you, but it's really cathartic to find something that you're good at and just go do it. If you put me in a tractor cab, I can sit there for 8 hours a day and I won't have to think about anything and I won't even have to think about what's going on around me. I can just do it all day long and I'll be a little tired at the end of the day, but much less tired than if you put me in an office and make me read a book all day. Paul is a tent maker. He knows how to do it. He doesn't have to think about it. He can rest. He can find fellowship with Aquila and Priscilla. And he can get ready for what God is going to continue to do with him next. And so God brings these new friends into Paul's life. But then in verse 5, he brings some old friends back into Paul's life. New friends are great. New friends are amazing. Old friends that are bringing encouragement to you are amazing as well. This is what he says in verse 5. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, Paul was occupied with the word, testifying to the Jews that the Christ was Jesus. See, Paul was alone because of a decision that he had made back in Athens. Paul had sent Timothy, and he had sent Silas to go check on some churches that they had founded earlier. He sends them to Thessalonica to check on the Thessalonian church, and he sends them to Philippi to encourage the Philippian church. Because that was important to Paul. He wanted to know how those believers were doing. He had spent time with them. He had preached to them. He had trained them. He had prayed for them. And he wants to know how they're doing. And so while he's in Athens, he sends his two partners away, knowing that he's going to be alone, but knowing that it's for the good of the church that they go. And then he travels on to Corinth by himself. But while he's in Corinth, after he's made these old friends, Silas and Timothy show back up. And they don't just show back up and are like, hey, Paul, why are you making tents? Why aren't you out preaching? Why aren't you out proclaiming? No, they show back up and they bring good news and support from the Philippian church and from the Thessalonian church. And we know this. You can write this down. I'm not going to go there, but you can look up 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6, and you can look up Philippians chapter 4, verse 14, where Paul in his letters to these two churches mentions Silas coming with support from Philippi and Timothy coming with good news from the Thessalonians. And so they get back and Paul's been resting, he's been making tents, he's been hanging out with Aquila and Priscilla, and his old friends bring great news to him. If you read the book of 1 Thessalonians there in chapter 3, he says that this messenger, that Timothy, came back bringing great news. Paul, the work you've been doing is continuing. Yeah, it seems like everywhere you go, people believe, and then you get stoned, beaten, thrown in jail, and you got to leave, and you don't know what's going on behind you. But I can attest to the Thessalonians that they're growing in grace, they're growing in the message of the gospel, and they're continuing in the foundation that you have built, Paul. I know you're discouraged now, but continue working because the gospel is continuing to work. The gospel is continuing to go out. And so Paul's attitude changes. He goes from this man that's beaten down, that's worried, that is even scared, and he begins to do what he's been doing throughout the whole book of Acts. Verses 5 through 8, I'll read 5 again. When Silas and Timothy arrived from Macedonia, Paul was occupied with the word, testifying to the Jews that the Christ was Jesus. And when they opposed and reviled him, he shook out his garments and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent. From now on, I will go to the Gentiles." And he left there and went to the house of a man named Titus Justus, a worshiper of God. His house was next door to the synagogue. Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, believed in the Lord together with his entire household. And many of the Corinthians, hearing Paul, believed and were baptized. Paul had gotten stuck. He had gotten sad. He had gotten worn down. And when he received the news, when he received the comfort from Aquila and Priscilla, he received the news from Silas and Timothy, he's ready to go. The message of the gospel is working. I can endure what's been happening to me because I know that God is continuing to work. And Paul begins his old cycle. He teaches. He goes and he reasons in the synagogue. And people begin to believe, and there are baptisms that are happening. People are publicly identifying with Jesus in Corinth. But this is where the cycle turns bad. This is the point in every town that Paul has gone to where the struggle comes. People have believed, so what's next? And that's going to lead us to how God, after he provides for Paul, point number two, God provides for the city of Corinth. People are believing. The good news is going out, but Paul knows what's coming next. The persecution is coming. What has followed belief throughout the entire book of Acts is persecution. The message needs to be stifled. These Christians can't continue teaching. We have to wear them down and take them out so that the message can't go forward. It's what drove Paul from place to place to place throughout the entire story. And so Paul's bracing for it. He's getting ready for the persecution that's fixing to come. And yet God intervenes again. Paul arrives in Corinth. God intervenes by bringing him the companionship of Priscilla and Aquila. God intervenes here in Paul's life. Let's read verses 9 through 11. And the Lord said to Paul one night in a vision, "Do not be afraid, but go on speaking, and do not be silent, for I am with you. And no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people." And he stayed a year and 6 months teaching the word of God among them. God's message to Paul is, do not be afraid. Don't be held back because of what you're expecting to come next. You think the persecution is coming because you think that these other outside forces are in control. Paul, I'm in control. Don't be afraid. Go on teaching. Go on speaking. Do not be silent. And why not be silent? Because no one's going to come to attack you. You don't have anything to be worried about. But also because my work in the city of Corinth isn't done, Paul. My work through you for these people is not complete. And so, Paul, you go on continuing to teach because there are people here who are mine, and they're going to hear the gospel, and they're going to believe because of the work that you're doing in this city. And that's an amazing encouragement to Paul. And I'm sure when Paul heard it, he was like, thank the Lord for this deliverance. Thank you for your protection and for your provision in my life. And while the words were for Paul, I think God's intention was for the city. Paul, you don't have to leave because I'm not done here. You don't have to leave because I still have work that I need to complete right here in Corinth. Have you ever considered how God's provision for you may have eternal significance for those that are around you. For Paul, it was the city of Corinth. I got a text Wednesday night after I'd gotten home from church. It's from my mom. She said, "Hey, are you home from church? Can you give me a call?" "Sure, I'm home." Give her a call. "Hey, your niece has something she wants to tell you." "Hey, Travi, I got saved." God's words were for Paul, but his intent was for the city of Corinth. God's provision in my parents' life created a relationship with a little girl that many, many years later reaped the benefits of their faithfulness and his provision in their life. For Paul, it was the saints of Corinth that this provision worked out for. For you, it may be your own kids. That God's provision in your life is a blessing to you to carry you through whatever is happening right now, but it's going to lead your kids to saving faith because they see the work that's happening in you. Maybe it's your coworker. Maybe you got a job that you thought, "I should never have gotten this job. I don't deserve it. I'm not trained for it. I'm not equipped for it. And yet God has blessed me with this position. And now your coworker gets to sit beside someone who knows the King of the universe and can share the good news of the gospel with them every single day. Maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe the mortgage worked out on a home that you never thought you should be living in a subdivision that you never thought you would be able to stay in. And yet now your neighbors, through the provision of God in your life, get to have a neighbor who can point them to Jesus. See, God's provision was for Paul. He's the one that heard the vision. He's the one that got the encouragement, but through his encouragement to Paul, the entire city of Corinth got to sit under the teaching and the training and the equipping of Paul for a year and a half, something that almost no other city had gotten to do. And I'm certain that Paul was encouraged by the vision. But if you read the book of 1 Corinthians, I believe the provision was to help establish a church that was in a city that was full of sin, that was going to be attacking the people of God daily, and they needed God's provision in their lives. They needed the Apostle Paul to train them up, to establish them. And if you read the book of 1 Corinthians, it almost didn't work. They had a lot of struggles still. We're studying 1 Corinthians on Wednesday nights. I would encourage you parents, if you have students that are coming on Wednesday nights, ask them about the city of Corinth. Students are like, "I need my notes now." Ask them about the city of Corinth, about the way that people came and went, and it was a place that anyone could become anything if they just got to Corinth. Or you could come and have any desire of your heart if you just got to Corinth. And yet Paul gets to stay and establish a people that are focused on God, that are grounded in his truth and in his word because of God's provision in his life. I would encourage you to consider the way that God has blessed you, the way that God has worked in your life to bring you to whatever moment, whatever point you're in right now. And then look around you. The book of Acts has been about a people that are sent out, that are given to go to Jerusalem, Samaria, and Judea, and the ends of the earth. And that same message is for you. That if you have trusted in Jesus, you've been given the mission to go to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the end of the earth, to Oldham County, to Louisville in Kentucky, and to the ends of the earth. And how has God provided for you right now that you get to take part in that mission? You get to be someone who steps out in faith and trusts the voice of God that says, "Don't be scared, for I am with you." Because that message that he gave to Paul was for all believers. You don't have to be afraid. You don't have to have all the answers because I am with you and I'm going to provide. The success of the gospel doesn't rely on your words of wisdom. Paul reminds the Corinthians, I didn't come speaking eloquently. I came knowing Christ and Him crucified. And so God provides for the city of Corinth through His vision, through His encouragement to Paul. Point number three, the provision doesn't just end there. It's not just this provision that gets Paul through this moment, or not this provision that just secures the city of Corinth for the people there. God's provision, God provides for the future of His church. His vision is much farther than what Paul could see. It was much farther than what the Corinthians could see. God provides for the future of His church. Let's look at verses 12 through 18. But when Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews made a united attack on Paul and brought him before the tribunal, saying, "This man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law." But when Paul was about to open his mouth, Gallio said to the Jews, "If it were a matter of wrongdoing or vicious crime, O Jews, I would have reason to accept your complaint. But since it is a matter of questions about your words and about names and your own law, see to it yourself. I refuse to be a judge of these things." And he drove them from the tribunal. And they all seized Sosthenes, the ruler of the synagogue, and beat him in front of the tribunal. But Gallio paid no attention to any of this. God has provided for Paul. He's given him the encouragement and the comfort that he needs. He has provided for the city of Corinth through Paul by giving him the encouragement and the safety to stay and equip the saints there. And now he's going to provide for the future of his church through means of the Roman government. See, the cycle that Paul had been going to was going to come to completion in Corinth. The cycle of preaching the gospel, people believing, being stoned, beaten, thrown in prison was going to happen eventually. God was just holding it off for a little while. And we see he says that he was there for a year and a half, but sometime near the end of that year and a half, the tensions finally arose to a point where it couldn't be ignored. The tensions continued to build, and Paul was brought to the authorities. Throughout the book of Acts, we have seen the gospel continue to go out as God provides through supernatural means, as people are healed and people sit and watch the apostles work. We have seen the gospel go out through healings. We have seen the gospel go out through an earthquake that opens the door of a jail, and Paul is able to walk out. But now God provides for the gospel to go out through the judicial system of Rome. He is going to work through the government that is in Rome to provide protection for Paul, not just in the city of Corinth, but across the entire empire. The Jews want Paul in jail. They want him in a place where he can't continue to teach, where he can't continue to persuade people that Jesus is the Christ. They want his mouth shut so that he cannot continue to do the work that he is doing. And so they bring him before this judge, Gallio, to make a verdict on what is happening in the city. And this would be one of, if not the first, court case involving the legality of Christianity in the Empire of Rome. What are we going to rule about the Christians that are going about and causing these disturbances in the Roman Empire? Gallio says, "Let him go. This is not my problem. He is not doing anything illegal. You say that he's twisting your laws. That makes it a Jewish problem. That makes Christianity a legal religion in the Roman Empire. He can go on, keep doing what he is doing." He's allowed to continue to take the gospel, to continue to establish churches, to to continue to train up leaders and send missionaries and provide comfort and care for the ones that he has established. But if it had gone the other way, if God had not intervened and provided the freedom in this court case, it would have been immensely difficult for Paul to continue. Christianity is going to be persecuted in the future. We're going to find Paul in a Roman prison eventually, but not right now. Not in this moment. In this moment, he's able to go free and the standard is set. Paul can keep doing what he's doing. If another judge asks, it's been said by this one judge that it's okay, and so they're going to continue to allow it to happen. And this is a vision that goes beyond just Corinth. It goes to the next towns that Paul's going to go to. As he goes to Antioch and he goes to Ephesus and he goes to Rome, Paul is able to keep going. The mission is able to continue because God worked through government rulers to allow him freedom to continue to do his work. If we don't think God is big enough to work through our own government systems, we don't have a big enough view of God. If we allow the outside forces to set the standard that what we think is right, and we don't think that God has the power and the ability to work through redeemed and unredeemed people for the betterment of our lives, we don't have a big enough view of God. I'm sure Paul, when he's brought to this moment, thinks this is where it's all going to turn bad. This is where I'm going to be thrown in jail. This is where God's going to have to do a supernatural work. And Paul is prepared. It says when Paul was fixing to open his mouth, when Paul was about to open his mouth, he's cut off. You don't have to give a defense. He was ready to give a defense. He was ready to try and persuade Gallio to trust in Jesus and let him continue to doing the work, but he didn't have to. God had worked it out ahead of time. He had provided now so that the future of his church was secure. An amazing theme to trace through the Word of God is God's provision for his people. We serve a God who always provides, who is always ready to step in. Whether it is in the way that we think he needs to step in or not, he is ready to provide. I'm sure when Paul got to Corinth, he wasn't thinking, I need to meet two Jews that are displaced from Rome to be encouraged, but that's what God knew he needed, and that's what God brought him. I'm sure he didn't think, I need to be here and make tents for a few months until Silas and Timothy make their way back. But when they made their way back with supplies and money and encouragement from the people that had been trusting in Jesus, that's exactly what he needed. I'm sure he didn't think, I need the supernatural work of God in a judge's life here in Rome to make me be able to go freely to continue doing the work that I've been given, but God knew that's what he needed. In the garden, Adam and Eve had everything they needed. God had provided fully for them. And after they sinned, God provided clothing for them. There's a famine in the land, but Joseph has been sold into slavery in Egypt, and God provides for his people through the bounty and wealth of Egypt. They're in slavery in Egypt, and God provides a way of escape so that they can make it to the promised land. They're in exile, and God brings them back. They're separated from him, and God sends his son. Our God is a God that provides for us at our deepest need, at the place where we don't think he can meet us, at the place where we think we are so separated from him that he would never care, love, and provide for us. He provides his only son. And we see the result of that throughout the book of Acts. Paul teaches in the synagogue and people believe, and their eternities are changed. Paul teaches in the house of a Gentile and people believe, and their eternities are changed. Paul stays for a year and a half, and the complaint is that this man is persuading people to worship God contrary to the law. People's eternities are changed. We're going to finish this morning by observing the Lord's Supper, which is a reminder to us of God's provision, of the sacrifice that Christ made for us on the cross that allows us to have a relationship with him. And maybe you're in the room and you're like, I don't understand that provision. I don't understand what the supper is, the body, the bread, what is going on here. And we would love to talk to you about that. As Pastor Rodrigo administers the supper, he's going to explain what it is and what it means. But we'll have a little bit of time after the supper when we respond and singing, and I'll be down here up front. And if you want to talk about what it means to step under God's provision, we can talk about it. If you want to talk about what it means to see how God is working in your life, to see how he's providing for you now, if you want to share an encouragement of how God's provision has worked out, not only for your good, but for his glory and the continuing of his mission, I would love to hear that. So I'm going to pray and we'll prepare to take the supper.